Good evening and welcome to Spirit Radio. I am your host, Willie Hassel. Along with my co-host, Lynn Nickerson, we will take you on a journey into the unknown, where the paranormal becomes the normal, a journey to a world cloaked in darkness, where reality becomes a thin veil. So sit back, relax, and join us as we venture into the shadows, the darkness, the unknown, and back. And good evening, and welcome once again to Spirit Radio, the Paranormal Experience. I am your host, Willie Hassel, your gatekeeper to the dark side, your guide to the realm of the unknown, the unseen, the unthinkable. And she is the always lovely. She is the mystical. She is the mysterious. And she is Lynn Nickerson.
And
hi, how are you?
I'm doing just fine. And how are you doing tonight?
I'm not doing too bad for
you're
for
doing
an old
good?
Guy. I'm doing good. Yeah.
You're doing good. Even though it's a little misty out.
Yeah, it's a little misty and foggy and chilly. But I bet our guest tonight is not.
I bet he doesn't have those problems.
He's not chilly. No, I bet he doesn't have those problems at all.
I think the monsoon season is over with.
Yeah.
I bet he's got a lot of sunshine.
I bet he does. Because we happen to know he's out there in the desert.
Yes.
Where it's always sunny and warm.
We're speaking enviously.
Yes, we are. So why don't I introduce him?
Please do.
I will. Tonight on Spirit Radio, the Paranormal Experience, we are pleased once again to welcome to the show Rocky Elmore. Rocky is a retired U.S. Border Patrol agent, and he is the author of the book Out on Foot, Nightly Patrols and Ghostly Tales of the U.S. Border Patrol Agent. After a career in the private sector, he joined the Border Patrol at the age of 34. He then served for 20 years as a Border Patrol agent. He was assigned to stations in San Diego, California, Kingsville, Texas, and Tucson, Arizona. And tonight we want to dig a little bit more deeply into the story of the ghost of Agent Luis Santiago, who was killed in the line of duty, as well as other amazing stories of ghosts, strange creatures, and other paranormal happenings in the Otay Mountains along the Mexican border near San Diego, California. So let us now welcome to the show Rocky Elmore. Good evening, Rocky. Welcome.
How you doing?
Well, it's so nice to have you back on. How have you been?
I've been good. Yeah, I've been good.
Are you working on another book?
I'm not at current time. I have a 2.5-year-old son.
Oh, terrific.
And he's turned out to be a lot more work than I thought he would be.
It's about time the dads find that out.
If I write a book, it might be on a different subject.
You mean Mr. Mom?
Yeah, it might be on Mr. Mom and how to deal with a Yeti living in the house.
Oh, no.
He's quite a hyperactive little boy. He's got a lot of energy.
But you're not implying that maybe you have a Sasquatch that visits you?
No.
No.
Just kind of implying he acts like something in between a little Yeti and a little Viking.
Oh, guess he's got a lot of energy. Huh?
I changed his name to Ragnar.
No, no. When's his birthday?
The day after Christmas.
Oh, no kidding. Okay. Yeah, he would have a lot of energy in the winter. I think this bears mentioning again. We'd like to talk about your experience course out there, but I think it's really important to make everybody aware that you guys are out there to maintain a way of life and safety and freedom for all of us. And over the course of performing all of your duties, there's always the potential for danger, and that you're facing bandits and temperature extremes and rattlesnakes. So Willie and I both want to thank you and your fellow workers for all of the service that you do, Rocky, or that you did.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. I know a lot of people don't actually believe me when I say it was actually fun.
Well, I bet a part of it
was. I mean,
was.
It comes with the bad, too, but
yeah.
You have your good times, too.
And, you know, unfortunately, Rocky, I can't hear you at all, but I'm just going off cue from what Lynn has just said, and I also want to put in my own personal thank you for everything you did.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
There's so much that's happening in the world today that these law enforcement officers are just facing terrible conditions. So I don't think they get thanked enough or respected enough. I guess this is for another show, huh?
Yeah, they have a lot of really tough decisions to make under incredible stress, the kind of stress that they're only under maybe one time in their life. But it hangs with them for the rest of their life, if they don't get it right. So it's tough. I'm almost glad I'm retired because it's tough out there sometimes.
Other than being Mr. Mum, do you have another type of hobby?
Well, I actually have lots of hobbies. I just don't get to do that many of them at current time. But I take the little boy, and we go horseback riding. I've got some friends who have horses out here.
Wonderful.
And we ride out into the desert, and he really loves that. He loves animals and being out in the country, and he'll ride for an hour at a time on the horse and just sit there, like a little angel.
Oh, that's wonderful. Congratulations.
All right. I can hear you now, Rocky. Oh. So I know what's going on now.
Okay. Technical difficulties.
Yeah.
But we've overcome.
Yeah, we've overcome once again.
Well, there was a part in your introduction that I wanted to mention. So this is what you wrote, that I wish to give some insight into the world of the Border Patrol agent and demonstrate how vastly different it is from other law enforcement agencies worldwide. Picture it like a very dark version of Alice in Wonderland, because for 10 to 12 hours each day, my fellow agents and I stepped into some kind of parallel universe entirely incompatible with the world in which we spent the other 12. that says a lot about parallel universes and typical reality, and then you step into just another world, be it with the bandits or be it paranormal. There's a lot to deal with.
Right, and it's just, there's just not really, I think I summed it up pretty good there. It's just one of those things you just almost have to experience to understand or believe it. I remember when I was a new agent riding with one of the senior guys, and it was his last night. He had enjoyed the job, but he had taken something else because he said, This job is the most asinine job I've ever seen in my life, because it is so out there. It is so crazy. It is so unusual. And I enjoyed it, but I just want a normal life. So he wanted to get out of the Alice in Wonderland scenario and go back and, have a more normal life. But I thought about what he said that night, many, many times, and it was true. It was you get used to it to the point to where it's not weird for us, but
it's still another reality, almost.
It's another reality, yeah. It most certainly is.
And you, I think that you reconciled it logically, and you said, if you have faith in God, strong spirituality, or even a basic grasp of the afterlife, then you understand the concept of dimensions beyond the one in which we live. It should not be hard to believe in other dimensions, that they can and do often intersect or bump into ours. So I thought that was very well put, because we're going to talk about Officer Santiago tonight, or at least we're going to focus on him. So we'd like to know, when was it that you met him, and tell us a little bit about his demeanor.
Well, I met him while I was in the Border Patrol Academy. We all went off to the town is actually Brunswick, but we called it Glencoe, Georgia. That's the big federal training agency there. Mm-hmm. And that's where the Border Patrol Academy was when I went through it. And it was about 4.5 to 5 months long, and that's where I met him. Now, I didn't know him too well in the academy, because our class was broken up into separate sections. I was in Section A, and he was in Section B. So I never really was around him much until we got back out to California at our station, and we were on the same training unit and the same patrol group, and I got to know him a little bit better that way. We worked around each other quite a bit, but we had never actually worked with each other as partners before. Mm-hmm. And we were scheduled to be partners for the very first time the night that he was killed. But he was one of those guys, he didn't tell jokes, but he always had you laughing because of his demeanor. He was always just popping off little one-liners and little sayings, and you know, it was just funny. He was a comical guy,
and he was very safety conscious, and he always had his vest on.
He was obsessed with his safety, and we thought that was funny because we thought it was a little bit overboard,
almost obsessive,
and especially for him because he was actually prior law enforcement, so he had actual experience in law enforcement, and most of the rest of us didn't have any experience. And it was just, but it was one of those deals, you know, where, and you met guys like this through your career, where some guys were really, really safety conscious, like they had premonitions that something was going to happen.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking when I read that, you saying that he was really safety conscious, and then look what happens to him. So let's get back to the night that you, well, that it all happened. And you were sick after you had been climbing up and down that cliff all day?
Right. We had been working nights, and California's kind of got some strange weather at times. We were just outside of San Diego, and, of course, once you get off the coastline, then the weather can actually get very hot and very cold. And oddly enough, in March seemed to be the coldest month of the year, at least during the night hours. And we were working graveyard shift, the midnight shift, and we had been working this canyon really hard for 3 or 4 days, and I had been assigned that same canyon every night for 4 or 5 days in a row, and just going up and down it and then stopping to work, I would sweat and overheat, and then when I would stop to work or lay in, I would start to freeze, and then I would get busy and have to climb back up the hillside. It was 800 feet on my side. So then I would overheat again, and, you know, several cycles of that, I got sick. You know, it was like, felt like the flu, but it was turned out just to be a couple-day thing. And
how cold
was
it, Rocky?
So I wasn't able to go to work the night I was actually scheduled to work with Agent Santiago.
How cold was it? Rocky?
Yes.
How cold was it?
You know, I don't know. It wasn't unbearably cold. It wasn't like what you get up north or something, but I would say it was probably down in the high 30s.
That's chilly, and to get all sweated up and so forth.
Yeah, that's
it wasn't freezing, but, you know, when you're wet, then it was quite cold.
Yeah.
It was enough to make you sick.
Okay, so you didn't go into work the next day. Can you hear me, Rocky? Okay. There must be a delay.
We're actually, we kind of did a double shift where we had one day a week, we actually went to a day shift for class time. But then the thing was when the day shift was over, we had to go home, and we had about just a few hours to sleep, and then we had to report back that night for the midnight shift. So everybody was doing a double the night that Agent Santiago got killed.
Okay, so you were in bed, and you heard a noise from your closet?
Yes, after I had called in sick, I went straight to bed because I was whooped. And, you know, in the middle of the night, I heard this rhythmic beeping coming from inside my room, and I couldn't figure out what it was. And I got up and started looking around for it and determined it was coming from inside my closet. And I opened the closet door up, and it was my walkie-talkie, my service radio from work, was beeping, and it was doing this rhythmic beeping. Now, I actually lived far enough away from the station that I couldn't actually communicate with my walkie-talkie, so I knew it wasn't possible that someone could actually be calling me from work on that walkie. But anyway, it was beeping, and I thought, well, maybe it's got a short in it or something, and I turned it on and off a couple times, and it stopped. I looked over at the clock, and the clock said 12:02, and I didn't think anything about it, and I went back to bed, slept the rest of the night, and the next morning I got a call from one of my workmates, and he informed me that Agent Santiago had gotten killed during the night shift, had fallen off a cliff and was killed, and the time of death was estimated to be around just a couple minutes after midnight.
Very synchronistic.
Yeah, very strange.
Okay, so you found out that it was Santiago, and then how long was it before? Well, then you had the memorial service.
We went ahead and worked a couple of more night shifts, and then on the day of the memorial service for Agent Santiago, we were given a day shift to work and given that next night shift off. So I attended his memorial service, as most of us did from the station, and went back home and went to bed a little bit early. And once again, in the middle of the night, I heard the very same rhythmic beeping inside my room, and it woke me up. So this time, I knew exactly what it was and where it was coming from. And I picked the radio up, and I looked over at the clock again, and once again, it said 12:02.
Mm. And like, your radio was off, wasn't it?
My radio was off, yes.
Yeah.
And at that point, I knew what was going on. You know, that was the only two times that had ever happened on my radio, so I knew what was going on. And I started to, you know, just kind of get the shivers up and down my spine.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't really know exactly what to do. I tried to turn it on and off a couple more times, and that didn't work. And I knew that something was on that radio or someone was on that radio that wanted me to press that talk button.
Couldn't do it, though, huh?
Yeah, and I was quite convinced that I would hear Agent Santiago's voice if I did that. I wasn't so convinced that it was actually his ghost. I thought, well, you know, could be a spirit imitating him, but I just didn't want, you know, that just wasn't something I was mentally prepared for.
So many things go through your mind.
Excuse me?
So many things go through your mind trying to logically explain it.
Right. And I was, you know, I have to admit, I was feeling really, I won't say just fear, not fear of my life, but it was a form of fear. Fear of the unknown, I guess.
Yeah.
But I didn't press that talk button. And I wound up taking the battery off the radio, and that's when it stopped. But no matter how many times I tried to get it stopped, it didn't stop until I took the power source off of that radio. Yeah. I carried that radio probably 5 more years after that, and it never happened again. Those were the only two nights that ever happened, was his death and memorial service.
Wow. And very ironically, you had a sort of a lecture by FBI agents, and they told you, don't worry about getting killed on duty. It's not going to happen. You shouldn't worry. What you should worry about instead is corruption or getting caught taking a bribe. It was just kind of ironic that they said that before Luis Santiago
right,
died.
And, you know, the whole class, that was part of our training for the training unit, and the whole class attended that lecture put on by the FBI that day. And honestly, we were quite offended by that.
I bet.
Mm.
Like they were making very light of the danger
dismissive.
Of the job and implying that a lot of us was going to turn out to be dirty. And, you know, this happened only just I can't remember exactly when, but probably no more than 2 weeks before Agent Santiago actually got killed. But they went as far to say, I guarantee no one in this room will ever get killed on duty. And 2 weeks later was attending his funeral.
Yeah, preposterous. So one of the first encounters, I guess it happened, on the 5th or the 6th of July. It wasn't too long after an article came out in a newspaper, sort of, you know, bashing patrol agents.
Right. That article came out in a university newspaper on July 3rd, and it probably was no more than 2 or 3 days I was working the jail section of our station. And one of my buddies came over and said, hey, Rocky, those aliens over there said they seen Santiago up on the mountain. And my jaw, I didn't know what to think about it. You know, I didn't know, it didn't really register. And I said, what do you mean they saw Santiago up on the mountain? And they said, well, they told me they just now saw Santiago tonight up on the mountain. Well, I really got mad because I thought, you know, are they mocking his death? And they're trying to say, like, somehow he didn't really die and he's out, you know. It just didn't make sense to me. I didn't comprehend it at the time because it caught me so much by surprise. And he said, no, Rocky, said they saw his ghost up there.
Wow.
And then it hit me what they were talking about. And I went over and I didn't talk to them, but I looked at them and they looked like they had seen a ghost.
Yeah, you said they were pretty shooken up. You know what? We're not quite at the bottom of the hour then.
Not quite.
Yeah. Then the second encounter happened on the 15th of July. And by this time, were the men in the office talking about it, or was it being swept under the carpet at this point?
Well, I think by the time we got to the 15th, I think that was only about the, I think that was about the second encounter, I believe, second or third encounter. And I think this was the one that I was actually involved in, right, on
mm-hmm.
the trail?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, at that point, it hadn't really, it wasn't well known yet. Not a lot of people knew about it yet. And we had laid in on trail. There was four of us, where usually there's only two of us. But
mm-hmm.
there was four of us, and we was up on the mountain. And me and my partner was going to be the busting agents, and we went north and went down into the canyon a little bit to cut them off north. And then the other two guys were going to stay behind, concealed, and let the group walk by, and then they'd fall in behind them, and we'd have them sandwiched in between us and, you know,
and that works.
Back everybody up. And that was the plan. And so the guys who stayed up on top kept calling us on the radio down below to give us the, let us know, you know, when to get ready for this group coming down. And all of a sudden, I think it was Miguel was up top, and he called me down there, and my star number was 259. He said, hey, 259, they just stopped on the road. I don't know what's going on, but they're just all standing out in the road. I said, okay, let me know when they get moving again. And a couple more minutes went by, and nothing happened. I called Miguel back on the radio and said, hey, Miguel, are these guys moving yet? He said, no, they're still just standing there on the road. I don't know why. They're just, you know, they're just standing there. So it was only a few seconds after that, Miguel called me again and said, hey, we hear crying over there. I think somebody stopped them. And at that point, we're all thinking bandits had intercepted them.
Oh.
So we thought, man, we've got a real serious situation going on up here. So me and my partner got back up there as fast as we could. And Miguel said, we're going to go over and see what's going on with this group. So you guys get back up here, you know, ASAP. So we're going up there expecting to have a confrontation with bandits. And when we got up there, it's about 35 people just standing in the road. And normally everyone is sitting down, you know, after we confront them. So I asked Miguel, I said, Miguel, why is everybody standing up? And he just had this strange look on his face. And he said, it's okay, I'll tell you later. So I just took him at his word, and we got the folks loaded up in some transport vans and sent them back down to the station. And then Miguel started talking, and he said that the group, when we got over here, they're still crying, and some of them were still crying when we got up there. He said they were intercepted by a phantom Border Patrol agent who identified himself as Agent Luis Santiago. And he walked right up to the guide, and he told the group about his death and how sad he was over his death, and that they weren't going to pass, and that the guide was going to stay right there with the group and wait for us to come over and arrest them.
Oh.
And that's exactly what they did.
That's amazing. That is amazing. Okay, so now, Rocky, we are at the bottom of the hour, so why don't we take a break right there, and we'll come back in just a minute, and we'll talk about the perceived death, how they thought Luis Santiago died, and then we'll get into the third encounter. So we'll be back in just
okay.
a moment.
Supernatural Magazine, one of the UK's top paranormal magazines, provides support to Spirit Radio, the paranormal experience. It is the magazine's goal to bring every aspect of supernatural news and research from around the world under one roof to create a universal platform for all those interested in the supernatural. For more information, available at supernaturalmagazine.com. And you are listening to Spirit Radio, the paranormal experience, on WSCA 106.1 FM. And we will be right back after this short break.
All right. Our guest list starts next week. We're actually having an open discussion. On the 15th, we're welcoming back Ingrid P. Dean, and she's the author of True Police Stories of the Strange and the Unexplained, and also Spirit of the Badge. And we're going to be talking about various UFO encounters that officers have had. On the 22nd, we're welcoming back also Tom Spitaleri, and he is the president of Essex County Ghost Project, and we're going to be talking about the spirits of King Philip's War. And on the 29th, Gary Vaughn will be guesting again. Gary Gillespie. Actually, he goes by Gillespie for the book. He wrote Chronicles of the Unexplained, and he's got some real creepy stories to tell us about. So that wraps up our guest list for the time being.
All right. So let's go back to the phone then with tonight's guest, Rocky Elmore. Welcome back, Rocky.
You still there?
Thank you. Still here.
Good to have you back.
That's good.
So we were talking about Luis Santiago. The night that you found out that he was killed, everybody was passing it off or saying that it was an accident and that he slipped over this cliff by the dam. So how long did they believe that story?
Well, a lot of us didn't believe that story from the very beginning. Mm. We had doubts about that right off. Because the way it happened was Agent Santiago was working with a training officer and two or three other trainees. So there was four or five of them working together. And they, as a group, was actually going down one section of the trail not far from that cliff. And then suddenly, for some reason, Agent Santiago broke away from the group and ran back up that trail and over to the cliff he fell from. And he was talking to the scope operator because the scope operator was talking about some traffic in the general area. And the last thing Agent Santiago ever said was, "I'll be there in a minute." Now, they were kind of thinking that possibly the guide had gotten up on that cliff before the group had to scout the area out. And Agent Santiago possibly seen that guide and decided to go up and go after him. But no one knows for sure because no one actually saw anybody else up there with him. But it's a very, very dark area, and that night it was very, very dark. So it's entirely possible that maybe Santiago just saw a quick glimpse of someone up there, and the rest of the guys didn't see it at all, and he decided to go up there.
Now
I never really believed that, but that was the official story, and still is as far as I know. But several years later, it did get out that he was shoved. And they thought they may have even known who may have been involved in it.
But they had no proof.
Nothing official was ever determined to be the case. Now, oddly enough, I'm retired, so I don't. But a friend of mine told me that they still get reports sometimes from people crossing illegally still claiming to have information on Agent Santiago's death.
Oh.
Now, to me, that definitely says that it's not an accident if it's still being talked about over in Mexico and Tijuana 20 years later and people are claiming to know about that death being something other than an accident.
Yeah,
so
it doesn't...
I think most people believe that it was not an accident. He was pushed by a smuggler. But they could just never get anywhere with the investigation, so it's remained an accident as far as I know.
Yeah, it does sound like there was more to it, though.
Mm.
Yeah.
Usually the groups come over from Mexico and they follow Otay Mountain and they have a guide, someone, a leader. So do you think that it was a guide, you say, that might have done this?
I think most definitely if he was pushed that it was a guide.
Mm.
A guide being a smuggler, but a particular type of smuggler. You know, all smugglers aren't guides, but all guides are smugglers.
Not a nice guy.
So, yeah, I definitely believe that if it was not an accident, he was pushed over by a guide. There's virtually no doubt about that.
Okay, so these sightings happened on that same trail that led up to this dam area in the cliff, correct? Most of them?
Right.
Okay.
And oddly enough, this trail stretched out for about 15 miles or better. It could have even been more. Strangely, most ghost sightings the apparition will only be seen where they lost their life. But Agent Santiago actually began to appear over on the mountain about 15 miles or better from where he was killed at. And over time, his apparition was seen along the trail, getting closer and closer to the dam.
That's interesting.
Very, very interesting and very strange. And when it would move closer to the dam, it would not be seen on the mountain anymore. So he would not be seen on the dam one night and over on the mountain the next night. He was seen on the mountain, and then he was inching his way toward Otay Lakes, and then he was seen down in the valley, and then he was seen over at the dam. And for about the last month that anyone ever saw the apparition, it was always on the dam on top of the cliff.
Wow. Okay, so on the third encounter, which happened on July 16, 1995, there were a group of illegals that saw him again, only this time he was carrying his head in his hands, they claimed.
That was the most unusual that we had heard.
Yeah.
And again, it had not got out. Everyone didn't know about this yet. The agent that told me this, we just happened to be riding together the night after it happened, and he did not know about my encounter because we didn't tell anyone. And he started telling me what had happened to him in the same area that our encounter had happened. And he said they had encountered the group, and they were just standing there, and they claimed they'd been stopped by a phantom Border Patrol agent, and they knew he was a ghost because he was carrying his head in his hand, but he was talking to them.
Wow.
Well, the agent told me, he said he was really, really offended by that and got mad, and he started yelling at the group. He said, quit talking about the dead, quit being disrespectful of the dead, because, you know, we knew, you know, Agent Santiago wasn't someone that had lived 200 years ago. He was someone we knew.
Mm-hmm.
So when we started hearing of his apparition being back, it was, you know, it was a very touchy subject. But anyway, he told them, you know, he said, quit being disrespectful of the dead, and besides, how could someone possibly talk without a head? And their reply was, well, sir, he's a ghost. He can do whatever he wants.
So how did he die? I mean, as far as, did he snap his neck? Did he lose his head?
Well, the details wasn't covered in the newspaper as far as I know. They just said he went over the cliff and he was killed instantly. But he was killed from head injury. Yes, he unfortunately hit his head on a rock and had very significant damage.
But was it severed?
His death was caused by a head injury, among other injuries that he had.
Yeah. I was just wondering the significance of carrying his own head if it had been severed. It hadn't, had it?
Well, no, it had not been severed.
Okay.
So I don't know, you know, why he... It would be appear in an apparition as being severed.
Yeah.
From what I was told, it was not severed.
Maybe just the fear factor to scare them, because all of those illegals stood there and they wouldn't run. They waited to be arrested.
They always waited to be arrested. Now, you know, when this first started happening, we thought, well, this is one of our coworkers with a very sick sense of humor doing this. But the group said, no, it's not. This guy is a ghost. He's not one of you guys playing a trick on us. We can see through him. He floats across the ground. He doesn't walk like a normal man. And then, of course, him appearing, holding his head, you know, and it became quite obvious that this was not a Border Patrol agent playing a trick on somebody. This was the real thing.
Yeah, in the fourth encounter, that was on August 4th, they mentioned that he glides. He didn't walk normally, and that he was semi-transparent so they could see right through him. So they knew what they were dealing with.
Right, he would just kind of glide across the terrain, according to some of them. He was transparent. And oddly enough, we believe this because if any group saw a Border Patrol agent, they would run immediately. Their guide would not hesitate to order them to run. But yet, he could approach them from a distance, and they never ran.
Yeah, there's something strange there.
Except possibly the last time, which we'll talk about.
Yeah, later. I noticed in just all of these sightings, they all just froze and
just
stopped.
Freeze.
And it was obvious that they were in fear.
They were scared, and many times they were crying.
Yeah, crying.
They were terrified.
Yeah.
They were terrified to the point that these guides, when, you know, guide is actually a pretty nice word. Yeah. People who are guides up in the mountains, these are vicious, vicious people, to the point of being near soulless. I mean, they are capable of horrendous crimes.
Yeah, you had mentioned that, wishing that maybe one of them might slip and fall and then not even being contrite about feeling that way because they're such miserable people.
Right. And I've wondered before, you know, I thought, well, is that how Agent Santiago was lured up here? Because this guy, we came face to face. It was a chance meeting right before dark. I had no idea a group was in the area. I was just going to walk down the cliff trail and check some things out. I run into this guy leading his group, and we just froze and locked eyes, and he took off. Well, I told him to sit, and he took off running instead, and he ran right for the cliff. But then he slowed down and he looked back to see if I was chasing him, because he wanted me to chase him over
there. Yeah.
He had 15 other people with him.
I thought, probably going to be ambushed.
Yeah, they'd get me over there and they could shove me over and there would be nothing I could do about it. I mean, you could pull your weapon out and shoot all you want to,
but you run out
of
bullets.
If they were determined to get you over, you'd go over. So I held back and I thought, is this how Agent Santiago was lured up here? And was this guy who did it?
Very frightening. Okay, then we move on to maybe the fifth encounter was very much like the fourth, and then you had the sixth encounter. It was still in the same group, but moving progressively toward the dam. And then the seventh encounter happened October 14th, 1995. It happened to Alan, and something really peculiar happened to his radio, or actually it was vehicle radio.
Right. Now, this particular agent was the last agent to speak with him on the radio the night of his death.
Oh, yes.
He was running the scope. And he was sitting with his windows down. It's probably about 11 o'clock at night, best I remember him telling me. And he heard a scream outside his window. Now, he was sitting blacked out down at the base of the mountain, but he had a scope operator behind him a little ways overlooking the area. So he got on the scope operator and told him he had heard a scream and wanted the scope to take a look around with the night vision to see if anything was around him. And the scope did, and he came back and said, no, there's no traffic on the scope. There's nobody out there. So Alan keyed his radio mic again to say, you know, okay, 10-4, acknowledge. And when he keyed his radio mic again, it began to just scroll an intelligible message across the LED readout of his radio.
Mm-hmm.
And the radios would read out what frequency you were on, like BRF1, BRF2, something like that. So it scrolled this across for probably about 45 seconds or a minute, and then it stopped. And it spelled out Santiago, and then the radio went dead, never worked again.
Never worked again. They had to take it out and put in a new one, new radio.
Right, they had to take it out, put a new one. They were not able to repair that radio is what I was told.
That is strange.
Now, he had heard a scream. Was that it? And he suspected traffic in the area. And by traffic, we mean illegals coming.
Right. He was actually sitting very close to the border fence, just a few hundred feet off of it. And in that area, if you heard a scream, it would probably mean that bandits had hold of somebody. Some woman was being possibly raped. We heard gunfire out there all the time.
Really? You know, that's scary.
All the time. And that's what he was thinking. He was worried that someone might need assistance and also for his own safety.
Oh, sure.
Something might be going on around me and I don't know it yet, or someone needs help.
So that night there was a scope operator, but what about the night that Agent Santiago died? Was there a scope operator then? Or did he just have a radio contact?
The night that Agent Santiago died, yes, Alan, that this happened to, was the scope operator that night.
That's right.
Now, where he was set up, though, he wasn't able to see the top of the cliff where Agent Santiago fell from.
Oh.
He could see the general area, but he couldn't see Agent Santiago or the cliff when he fell.
Oh, goodness. That's a shame. Okay, then we move on to the eighth encounter, and let me see, when did this happen? I guess it was November of 1995, between November and January, and he was closer now with the sightings were moving closer to the dam itself, and I'm trying to see what specifically happened on the eighth encounter. Do you remember, Rocky? Is that...
Is it the one where he actually helped a group, or where he actually started confronting people on the dam?
Actually, the smuggler ran directly toward the top of the cliff, but then slowed down, looking back to see. Oh, that's when you were chasing him. Okay, so how
that's
about
the story?
That you just told.
An encounter there, yeah.
Right. Okay, so we move on to the ninth encounter then on January 21st, 1996, and it involves Agent Eschelmeyer.
Eckelmeyer.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes, that was that. Now, shortly before her encounter, it was really getting out that these things were happening. I'd say probably about the fifth encounter, the entire station was starting to know, and everyone was privy to what was going on, especially on our patrol group. Now, after Gail Eckelmeyer's encounter, everyone knew, because she was a very popular agent. She was very sharp, well-respected, and, she did not back down off saying what happened. So what happened was there was a pair coming up. They had climbed up the trail next to the cliff, and Eckelmeyer and her partner had been made aware that there was traffic over by the cliff. They didn't want to work it by there, so they backed off a couple of hundred yards and picked a trail and hoped that the traffic would come to them. So a few minutes went by, and sure enough, they noticed these two guys walking down to them, and they're talking out loud. They're not trying to be sneaky. They're not trying to hide. They're just, talking like nothing's going on. And they walked directly over to the brush that Agent Eckelmeyer and her partner are hiding behind, waiting for them. Walk right up to them, call out to them, give themselves up, and say, "We knew you were here." And Agent Eckelmeyer said, "How did you know we were here?" And they said, now, I actually found some more about this encounter after I wrote the book that I didn't know at the time.
Oh.
But I was told that the two aliens said, because we encountered a blood-soaked agent on top of the cliff, and he told us you were here, and he told us to come over and give ourselves up to you. And at the time, they wanted to make absolutely sure, again, that this wasn't some Border Patrol agent playing a trick.
Yeah.
And, of course, the two aliens were very persistent that, no, he was a ghost soaked in blood, but he was a Border Patrol ghost. And they made numerous radio calls and did a flyover of the helicopter and all that kind of thing.
To make sure it wasn't real, because it could have been real.
To make sure that it wasn't some real agent just messing with people. Because now they're really talking about something that was very, very dangerous, messing with somebody on that cliff.
Yeah.
Cause them to fall over, and you could be in really serious trouble.
Now, back at the station, up until this point, everyone was pretty solemn, and they believed what was happening, didn't they?
They did. I'd had a talk with FOS at the time, and an FOS would be equivalent to a shift commander, basically.
Supervisor.
He would be the top man, the top supervisor on that shift. And our shift had, a good 150 people on it, so this guy is somebody who's got some authority. And I was speaking with him one night while I was assigned desk duties, and there was some traffic being worked near that cliff, and we were listening to it on the radio, and he said, "I hope they don't work that." And I asked him why. He said, "Because I know for a fact that Agent Santiago is still up there patrolling that cliff." And I asked him, I said, "So you believe all the stories too?" And he said, "I have no doubt about the stories."
Wow. So why was it he didn't want them to work it, though?
Well, because of the possibility of someone else going over.
Oh, I see.
Killed. actually, there had been several people, even before Santiago's death, several people had went off of that cliff. It was a very dangerous area. And it was one of those areas where the terrain was very, very dark. So you couldn't hardly see anything anyway. But then there was a slope that led to the cliff. It wasn't a cliff that was flat like most people would think of. It was a slope that led down the mountain and then just suddenly dropped 120 feet.
Wow.
So it would be very, very easy to just be walking through there a good distance from the cliff and just have your feet slip out from under you and just tumble off the side.
Oh.
So it's very dangerous.
Very
place.
Dangerous.
We actually avoided it best we could.
Mm. Well, then that brings us to the final encounter of the 21st of January, 1996. And Arlo was involved in this. And there were a bunch of illegals, again, up by the dam. Do you want to take it from there, Rocky?
Right. There was a group was detected coming up again up the trail in between the dam and the cliffs, and they're right next to each other. The trail actually is just very, very narrow trail that goes up there. So Arlo, a classmate of mine and Agent Santiago's, he was the only one available to go work the group. So he went out there, and there's, you know, a couple of different versions. But he went out there, and he said when he got there that there was already panic and chaos on the top of the cliff, and that there was about 9 or 10 people up on top, and they were screaming that several people had went over the cliff.
Ooh.
So he called in more agents to come help him, and they did, and one person was killed at the scene, and that was determined to be the smuggler because he broke and ran first, and everybody followed him. But when they got back to the station, the aliens began to tell that a Border Patrol agent chased them over, shooting his gun at them, and that's
wow.
why they went over. The
wow.
smuggler had taken off running away from them, and everybody followed him. And 6 of them went over, and then the rest of the group, seeing it was a cliff, so they were able to stop in time. So Arlo came under scrutiny, and they started questioning him and accusing him of doing this and saying that, you know, this didn't happen before you got there. You caused this. So he was in quite a lot of trouble at the time. So the FBI was called to investigate, and they tested Arlo's hands for gunpowder residue, and then they paraffin tested his weapon. And both came up clear that his weapon had not been fired, and he had not fired a weapon himself. So that kind of cleared him a little bit, but then they did a lineup, and nobody of the 9 or 10 that did not go over, it was nine that didn't go over, they could not pick Arlo up out of the lineup, and not only could they not pick him up out, but they were insistent that it was not him. So the FBI had no choice but to actually clear him, and they were left still looking for a suspect. So they lined several other guys up, and there were no takers, and they showed several pictures of agents, and still yet none of these surviving aliens could pick anybody out. Now, the FBI didn't know what had happened previously on that cliff. So, and all these things were reported by the San Diego newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
And oddly enough, when they reported this, they didn't say that an undocumented immigrant had went over the edge and was killed like they usually did. Their headline was that a border fugitive had went over the cliff and was killed. Now, that was kind of weird. I don't know if that means something or not, but that was the first time I had ever seen that term used.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it was kind of telltale. But anyway, the FBI hit a dead wall with their investigation.
So we got two more minutes, Rocky. Two more minutes.
One of the Border Patrol agents went out. He took a picture of Agent Santiago, brought it back in. The FBI showed it to the surviving aliens. And supposedly, every alien picked Agent Santiago as the agent who chased him over the cliff, firing his weapon.
Wow.
And
Question is, though, they interviewed workers that were working on the dam or utility, and in the area, no one had heard gunshots, and yet the illegals said that the agent fired a gun, so they didn't hear any shots.
Right. There is a water treatment facility right there, probably 100 yards from the dam or less, and it's very quiet out there at night. And these guys, four or five of these guys, were outside working when this happened. And they heard all the commotion as far as people coming up and screaming, but they said there were absolutely no gunshots.
Wow.
They would have heard gunshots, and there were no gunshots.
Oh, my gosh. That is amazing, Rocky. Thank you so much for telling us that story. I hate to have to cut you off, but we're right at the end. So
yeah, we have run out of time again.
Yep.
But we do have time.
Thank you for having me on. I enjoyed it.
Thank you for joining us. But we do have time quickly, though, for you to give out your website and tell people where they can buy the book and stuff like that.
Sure. RockyElmore.com, and they can get the book on Amazon.
Excellent. Okay. Thank you so much, Rocky. We really enjoyed it.
Thank you very much, Rocky, for joining us, and thank you for your service.
Again.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Okay.
Our pleasure. Good evening.
Have a good night.
Good evening.
All right. That is Spirit Radio, the Paranormal Experience. Overtime again.
Oh, dear.
And Craig Mosier with the Graveyard Shift is coming right up.
And thanks to everyone for listening, and have a good night.
In this one of many possible worlds, all for the best, or some bizarre test. It is what it is, and whatever. Time is still the infinite jest. The arrow flies when you dream. The hours tick away, the cells take away. The watchmaker keeps to his schemes. The hours tick away, they tick away. The measure of a life is a measure of love and respect. So hard to earn, so easy.